Welcome, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades. I have a special pre-election Tuesday show, really a pre-election week for you all week long, the week of the Michaels. Michael Boris today, Michael and Michael Knowles. We're talking all election from a Catholic perspective all the time. Michael Boris, the man who needs no introduction. How the heck are you, man?
I'm doing well, Timmy. How are you? So I call you Timmy.
Timmy G. Yeah. If I played G. the saxophone, that would be the tenor sax anyway.
Though yeah, it kind of sounds like got a bit of a rapper name to it. Timmy G. Everybody welcome Timmy G to the stage. Come on up
into his house. That's what we're talking about. Right before we rolled camera, we were saying what's with the pervasive Southern influence on rap? It doesn't really matter or anything, but we were talking a little bit about Kristen Welker, the moderator from the debate last night, and I'd like to open up on that note. People are saying she did a slightly better job. Question number one. I think that gets exaggerated, but better than Chris Wallace. And question number two, we learned last night that Abraham Lincoln is the most racist president ever from the wisdom of Joe Biden. What about that?
Well, look, there is a certain class within the, I sort of even hesitate to call it the African-American community, because when you say that, there's an image of the African-American community that has been well-honed and well-shaped and well-manufactured by the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the mainstream media, that if you're talking about African-Americans, you're going right into the hood and it's this horrible experience of everything. Da, da, da. Right. And what they don't ever seem to really talk about is the people like Kamala Harris, who I'm not even sure you could really say is African-American, and Kristen Welker from last night. These people had nothing of what you would sort of understand to be, or what's commonly understood to be, the African-American experience. You know, that they're descendants from slaves, and they've had all the, you know, the horrible side effects of that, generational, and you know, they've grown up in very, you know, difficult socioeconomic circumstances and all that. Her parents, Kristen Welker's parents, hang out and party with, you know, the Obamas. Now, there was a picture that she took all this stuff down off her social media feed, but everybody captured it. Pictures of her and her parents sitting there, you know, chilling in front of a Christmas tree at the Obamas. And the reason it matters is because they try to portray it as though it's their experience. And just, you know, I'm an African American woman. Well, you're an African American woman, but you don't, but not the way everybody understands that term to be. So it's hypocritical, it's trading on race. And white guilt, I have to have a leg up on you. Excuse me, your parents are loaded. You went to, I think it was Yale or Harvard, I can't remember where she went to. This woman has never, you know, lacked for anything in her life. So for her to keep going on yesterday, you know, and those moderators are the ones who pick the topics. I don't know if many people realize that. The commission doesn't pick the topics. The moderators pick the topics. The commission, you know, looks at them and says, okay. But the questions and the topics come from the moderators. So once again, you heard them. Now let's talk about racism in America. Well, you're the one stoking the fires of racism. You know, first debate, Biden was going on about systemic racism among the police, systemic racism. And then about 50 seconds later, he says, well, you know, it's just a few bad apples. Well, which is it? I mean, are just a few bad apple cops, or is this system-wide and it's everywhere in the system? Which is it? It can't be both. So they've just taken the word racism, and then to kind of, you know, give it juice, they stick systemic in front of it, when people don't even know what that word means, and it just makes it, you know, all the more fiery and everything. This is a systemic racist society that twice elected a man. Again, Obama would be another one of those cases where he's kind of African American, without the African American experience. You elected a guy who's black twice to the highest office in the land. How exactly is that a racist country? Are there individuals walking around the country who are racist? Well, of course there are. There's people walking around the country who are babbed on every single score. But this constant push of racism, because this is how Marxists have to divide in America. Class warfare doesn't work in America because the middle class has everybody in it. Latinos, blacks, whites, everybody. Everybody's in the middle class. Asians, everyone. So you can't start this big class warfare thing. So America has this unique history, of course, of the melting pot and all of that, where you can point to slavery and say, ah, there's a wedge issue, so let's use that to separate people. And it's really an evil thing to do, to deliberately go around and find things on purpose to create division so that you can then exploit that division for your own power. That's an evil thing to do.
That's what Marxism and critical theory does. It finds a weak spot, a typification, like America is systemically racist. It doesn't mean anything. Look, what it means is there's a pervasive racism in America, but we don't have to alienate any of the electorate by saying they individually are racist. It's a chimera.
Exactly.
It's clever. You got to tip your hats to these people if they have no, you know, ethical compunction about playing by these rules. Then you got to tip your hats to them.
We're always saying here, Tim, you know, look, who's the crowd you're dealing with here? They kill children. So is there anything that's going to be, oh, no, that's a bridge too far. We can't possibly accuse people, you know, a country being systemically racist. You kill children. Nothing's off the table for you.
Moreover, they say that there is no room in their party. All of the Democratic leaders say there's no room in their party for anyone any longer that does not believe in the total ubiquity of making it illegal to make killing children illegal. You have to be on board. So, I mean, do you think, in a nutshell, Mike, that she did a better job than Chris Wallace? Because that's a low bar.
Yeah, it is a low bar. As far as, you know, there not being this, a horrible just back and forth arguing, sounds like, you know, talking heads on a news show thing. Yeah, but I don't know that she's the one who did that. I mean, the commission said, we're going to put these mics on and we're going to threaten you and talk to you behind the scenes, both candidates, and da-da-da-da-da. So I guess maybe on that level, sort of, you know, you can give her kind of a plus 0.1. But, you know, the moderator is supposed to moderate the discussion so that there is an evenness to it, aka a fairness to it. It wasn't fair. Did she come off a little bit more, in control of it than Wallace? Yeah, but who cares? You know, the underlying principles, you know, you're trying to exact positions from people, apples to apples, so people can see. So viewers, that's why you view a debate. So you can see, what's their point and what is such and such say about the point. But, you know, the sum of her questions essentially were, you know, Mr. President, why do you suck? Fill in the topic. And then, well, Mr. Vice President, what's your response to why he sucks so much? And that was essentially it. I mean, question after question. And so she'd let Biden ramble on about something and lie after lie. And then Trump says, well, I'd like to respond. And she's like, no, I have to move on to my next topic now. Well, no, you don't. Why do you have to move on to the next topic? You're the moderator. You say, he just said this. I mean, what's your response to that? Go back and forth. But, you know, they spent 30 minutes talking about COVID.
Right.
And that's just running the clock. You had six topics. She is the one who picked six topics. The first topic took up one third of the show. And it's not like we haven't heard it before. It took up almost half of the show, the first debate with Chris Wallace.
Right.
Democratic Party talking points where they think they can score points, probably can, against Trump because of the media narrative constantly going out. He sucks. He's killed Americans. It's all his fault. You know, he's the worst person that's ever been born or conceived in the history of the universe. And he sucks, and here it is, and he's killed 250,000 Americans, and why do you suck so much? And we know you suck, but tell us why you suck. I mean, that's essentially the thing, and it just goes on and on and on like that. So the moderator, and this is one of the points specifically in your question about did she do a good job, yes, they weren't arguing with each other, stepping over each other. That's the end of the discussion. The moderator makes the debate fair and even. She picked six topics. So you would get 1/6 of the time for each of those topics, at least ostensibly, but one topic got 33% of the time because it's a way to score cheap points against Trump.
Out there listening don't know that traditionally the final presidential debate is supposed to be wholly devoted to foreign policy. And it came up in short fits and spurts last night, Russia and China. The one little kudos I offered her on Twitter was the fact that she brought up the Hunter Biden hard drives, emails, etc. She kept it short, 20 seconds. So I don't want to be giving her many plaudits at all. That was abysmal for all the reasons you just enumerated. But, you know, the hand that strikes is the hand that takes away. She spent all of 5 minutes on what the entire final debate was supposed to be devoted to.
And I wouldn't be as generous because it was Biden that ventured into, he's the one that opened the door on it.
That's true.
He made the comment. He's like, well, you know, all these things you're hearing about, you know, and, you know, the China and this, I mean, which I actually kind of, I was watching that. I was like, did he really go there with that?
I know.
You know, and I was like, wow, okay. And so I thought, well, this will be interesting to see how Trump responds to this because he just opened the door to it. And then that's when, she, you know, they went back and forth a couple times. That's when she jumped in and just made some comment. And now I've got to get on my next topic. Why? Is somebody holding a gun to your head? You know, is there some rule? Is that like the 11th commandment? You must do all the topics on the list. I mean, I've got to move on to the next topic. We've got to move on to racism. We've talked about all this in another debate. Why can't we talk about something we haven't talked about in this debate?
We didn't even know about in the first debate much because the FBI has withheld the Hunter Biden emails since December of 2019. Thank you, FBI. I know they're against Trump, but thank you. They chose to release it now. They created their own deep state pro-Trump October surprise. So we'll take it. And it looks like, as Tucker Carlson said last night, the mainstream media is not going to be able to shadow ban this. What do you say?
Well, I mean, I think that's the case. And I think this is one of the reasons why you look at the horrible area of tech, giant tech censorship. It's because they overplayed their hand on that. And then all these other little conversations were happening. Fox finally picked it up and, you know, it finally sort of broke through the ceiling and got into the Fox thing. But even at the very beginning, remember, Fox was saying, well, this is a legend. We don't know him. We haven't verified it and everything.
Right.
It's only the personal human being contacts of, for example, Rudy Giuliani with the individual producers he knows at Fox where he said, I'm going to take this to you. He took the New York Post first. So when you look at the sort of very narrow bottleneck of it just being a couple of human personal relations, which on one level is how a large part of the news world works. It's personal relationships. People call you up with a story and then point you in the right way, and then you can explode and do a big job with the story. But in this case, you're doing that in an arena where there's resistance to what you're saying and doing. So, you know, Rudy picks up the phone, calls somebody he knows at the New York Post. He's probably showing them all these pictures. By the way, I can't say how, but I've actually laid eyes on one of those pictures. It's absolutely revolting.
You have? You can confirm this. I trust. So you've laid eyes on one of the Hot Topic pictures with the Chinese underage girls.
Correct.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so when is that going to break, man? That's big. That's big time.
Well, I mean, the question of whether you can actually show any of those, even if I don't know, because it's child porn. I mean, it's child porn. And I don't know if you can. I don't know. We were having the discussion here. I haven't been in a media room meeting with an attorney on this kind of topic for a while. I would imagine that if a media outlet, I don't know, this is just me pure speculating. I don't know what the laws are now. And I don't know where the laws are in a particular state where you would be, where the particular station would be where that would release the image and then cover up part of it and pixelate it or black out whatever the, you know, horrible part would be. I don't know if you're still allowed to actually reproduce those and broadcast them. I don't know. I don't know what the laws are there. So I don't know that you'll ever actually see the pictures broadcast across something. You know, if you are in possession of child porn, you're committing a felony. At least if you have knowledge of it. I mean, somebody just puts it on your phone, you don't know about it, that's one thing. But if you're just sitting there looking, and here it is, and you've got it on your phone, on your TV screen, and you're, you know, it's a felony. Now, how that meshes with the laws about journalism and all that, I don't really know where those laws are right now. So I don't know that we're ever actually going to see the pictures, but I don't know that it's, you know, we know that Giuliani told us he'd shown not just the emails, but some of the pictures to people he knew at Fox News and he knew at the New York Post, same parent company. So they've confirmed, yeah, this is what we saw. So it is a, you know, that's, there's sort of two stories here. One is that, which is just completely revolting. And the other is all the business dealings and the financial things. Now, they're all intertwined because it's all coming on the same, you know, there's three hard drives. It's all coming on the same hard drives. And it's the, you know, whatever. You wonder what Tony Bobulinski has on his phones. I mean, when he had that little press conference yesterday, which, by the way, was extremely interesting. We're sitting in here, and as you can see, our TV studio behind us here, we've got monitors all over the place. And half of them, half of them are Fox, and the other half are CNN. Fox has his press conference up live. And when you're looking over at the CNN monitors, while that's going on live, CNN's, you know, COVID. People are dying. More people are being diagnosed. Oh, more cases. People are dying, too. You know, Kamala Harris said today that 200 million Americans have died in the last 3 months from COVID. And I'm like, well, that's quite the claim. You mean 200,000, right? Not 200 million. And that's really the story. You know, to the degree that Joe Biden may or may not have known about the porn, and the activity behind the porn, you know, that's one thing. But this is a man who, while he was vice president of the United States, according to all the reports we've seen and heard and everything of people who've read the emails and everything else, this man personally profited from his office through the agency of his son, dealing in all of these various business transactions and dealings with, in addition to a few countries, but China in particular, where he has a long-standing relationship and offshored millions of U.S. to that country, the same country he personally profited from. I'm not sure if that exactly rises to the level of treason, but it certainly rises to the level of you cannot be president of the United States, and you probably should be in jail.
Without a doubt. I want to ask you one thing that Christine Niles and I were interacting last week on Twitter about with regard to the three ostensible hard drives that have some more juiciness on them. According to people on the internet, there's this Chinese dissident man that was pictured with Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon in the background. It was definitely a posed shot and meant to look like an IA in action shot. Yeah. Are you hearing anything about that second and third hard drive? I'm hearing about different etiologies for where they found the Hunter Biden emails. When is that all going to come out?
Well, I mean, I think it is sort of trickling out right now. You just have to sort of pay close attention because it is being leaked It's being, you know, reported and put out by different sources, but one of the hard drives obviously is the one in the computer shop, where, I mean, why you leave your computer?
I know.
I got it. Delicious. You got to repair your computer, but you know, at that point, you just, you know, I don't know, whatever, drops the computer off. Another hard drive is the one from with all the emails is from one of the business partners who's actually in jail already. And then, of course, the other stuff here is from Bobulinski. So, you know, you've got sort of three different sources of all of this, and they're all confirmed. And the FBI, from what I understand, the FBI is actually questioning Bobulinski as you and I are actually doing this interview on Friday afternoon. They're already with him right now. you just look at this and you think, well, this is so gigantic. Gigantic. It's complex. I mean, 28,000 emails from one place, 26,000 or 28,000 from the other place. I mean, 50,000. I mean, this is more than Hillary.
I know.
And I'm sure all 28,000 or 50,000 or whatever it is, I'm sure they're not all about wedding planning. And so you look at all this and you're like, well, my goodness, this is, you know, you take some time to sift through this. I mean, Steve Bannon is just looking at the stuff since August. It takes time to, you know, to get up on a blackboard. At some point, you got to get on a blackboard and start connecting the dots and saying, well, who's this and who's that? You know, if you ever watch any of these crime dramas like, you know, SVU or CSI or anything, you always see they have – all the pictures, the headshots of all the bad guys on them, and they write the little notes under them, and they're trying to figure out the case. They're doing their investigation.
With pushpins and strings, you know, connecting all that stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, that's you don't understand the full network of things, the full operation. So you have to kind of begin, and you don't know. It's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you have some things that are kind of clear and other things you look at, and you're like, which way does this go? And it just takes time to put it all together. And when you look at all the people in the, on the copy of these emails, man, there's a lot of people. Well, who are these people? And, you know, that's how they got a hold of Bob Alinsky. So,
yeah, it's doing first-year attorney work is highly unpleasant because you're doing a lot of this. You're papered under, in some cases, 5,000 to 10,000 documents. And one, the low man on the totem pole, the first-year attorney, has to go through, I hated this so much, and do precisely what you're talking about.
Yep.
So that's the case with the Hunter Biden emails. Now, the beautiful thing is all it takes is one or two that are devastating. And yesterday, Bob Alinsky seemed to be giving interviews around the time that some really damning ones were revealed, you know, about the big guy. We haven't demonstrably certainly proved yet that that's Joe Biden himself. Right. I want to ask about Pennsylvania. Just one more question on the debate itself, if you please, Mike. I know you're busy. But did Joe Biden, for all intents and purposes last night, lose Pennsylvania in the last 4 minutes when he said, there in Pennsylvania where the Marcellus gas shale play is everything to the people, he said he will end gas shale fracking. When he said, you know, I'm going to phase out oil and gas, fossil fuels in general. And then he lied about fracking, which is the most controversial aspect of oil and gas, fossil fuels. Did he lose Pennsylvania? I was cheering at my TV screen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how anybody there who has a job that's dependent on that. You know, we were having a discussion over here earlier, just, you know, a little while ago. People may not realize, but in the United States, one in every 10 American jobs is related to the oil and gas industry, and then you think about the you know the ones the peripheral to that. Well, you know, that's the auto industry, and you know, what about, you know, airplanes? And you're going to fly a 747 from here to, you know, Heathrow on solar power?
I am wind power. And you generate the wind as you fly.
It's very cool. Yeah, you know. And he said he's going to put 500,000, you know, electric charging stations for all your Teslas. By the way, how are you going to build the Teslas and shape the things in the factories? It's absolutely ridiculous to consider that the American economy, which is, you know, based on fossil fuel and energy, that you're just going to blow this up and move to, I don't know, wind turbines in the middle of Iowa. I think anybody looking at that, even some of the union folks who have been sort of back and forth because of the social issues, you know, job-wise, they've been, you know, with Democrats, but social issues, they've been with, you know, Republicans, they're kind of floating back and forth. Well, if that doesn't give just sort of any class, you know, any middle-class union household, you know, they're against abortion, they're against all this crazy social stuff, and you got, you know, sort of good American values, I suppose you could just phrase generally. Well, you know, you're going to lose your job. And if you remember, in one of the debates, I can't remember the young fellow who asked the question, one of the reporters, but in one of the debates, he said directly, we've used the soundbite here in a number of stories we've done. He said to him, you know, Mr. Biden, are you prepared to, you know, tell 10,000, 20,000, maybe 100,000 workers in oil industry, oil and gas industry, that they're going to lose their jobs? Are you prepared to tell them that? And he said, yes, yeah, you're going to lose your jobs. So what do you do when you lose your jobs, but you're over here waiting for, I don't know, whatever solar power, you know, to, you know, catch on? Pennsylvania is tight. I mean, depending on what you're looking at, it's, you know, 2 to 5 points right now, roughly. In, you know, going towards Biden, but 2 to 5 points isn't that much of a lead, and you're outside of the margin of error, but barely outside the margin of error. And the way the turnouts are going, you know, if a wave of people show up, which would be mostly Republican on election day, And of course, in Pennsylvania, it's really election week now, because you get to vote on not just Tuesday, but also Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. You have 4 days to vote. That's nice. I don't know. That's I think you may have very well put Pennsylvania really sort of back in the at play, maybe even leaning towards Trump at that point. I mean, Trump is an oil and gas guy. That's what he is. It's, you know, he's the pipelines, everything. This is what he's been. Look at us. We're in the, you know, one of his big campaign stumps a few months ago was how solid we are. We're energy independent. Look at what that gives us. We don't have to be involved in these foreign wars, protecting this, that, and the other. And well, that's pretty big. You know, that's a big advantage. And then for him to just step right into it and say, "I'm just going to take away all those jobs and that whole industry, and we're going to blow it up." I mean, to whatever degree, I suppose you might say Texas was maybe quasi kind of in play. The place it was in play in Texas would have been Houston. Well, pretty sure that, you know, the Houstonians aren't going to like hearing that, as also neither the Northwest Pennsylvania union workers. They're just they're trying to transform America, and at some point they've got to really take some big chunk of it and knock it down. They've got a bunch of little things, you know, along the way that affect various populations here and there and this and that. But at some point, as you continue to sort of gobble up, like Pac-Man used to do, you're just gobbling up higher and higher. At some point, you've got to bite into something big.
Yeah,
gobbling. So I don't know. I don't think it's a... I don't think it was a good thing to do. And actually, if you watch CNN just a few minutes ago, they're like, well, that's not really what he meant. He didn't really mean. He's just talking about like this transition and it's going to happen over time. And well, no, that's not what he said.
Right. Right. No, and Trump delivered, actually Fox News put it out, the promised video of him saying a million times he really did aim to end fracking and Harris. Now, you might not know this, Mike. Me and Dave are from an oil and gas family. I was actually an oil and gas landman. That's part of the way I put myself through law school when I already had a family. So I know the Marcellus natural gas shale play is everything in Pennsylvania. In Texas, the Barnett shale play. And that's when we talk about fracking, we're talking about natural gas coming from shale.
Right.
And there are a few plays in Texas because it's got more. But for Pennsylvanians, the Marcellus shale gas formation is what you frack, and it is central to their economy, their otherwise completely depressed economy. It is issue number one to them. When he said that in the last 3 minutes, I was cheering. I couldn't believe he stepped in it. I think it's momentous. The common knowledge, the common wisdom on the right already today is he really might have blown Pennsylvania for himself. That might be an overstatement. I hope not. But it was really a bad way to end the debate for him. In general,
I think on that point, he would have to have shifted, not lost, but shifted probably 250,000 votes, which isn't that many in Pennsylvania. He would have to have shifted probably about 250,000 votes, I think, to have lost Pennsylvania with that. Now, are there that many workers or households that are dependent on that, either directly or, you know, on the periphery? Probably. So, yeah, I think he certainly would have weakened his position in Pennsylvania, and who knows what's going to go on here in the next week. Now, so there's still another week and a few days. It's obviously something his campaign and the media are now trying to dial back on. They're like, oh, wait, it's not what he meant, and he's talking about doing this over the next 5 million years, and it's not going to affect you, and you're going to be all trained up and all that stuff. But no, he's been against all this for a long time. He wants to destroy America's energy independence because that's something we're so dependent on, because they hate America. They hate America, and they hate anything that keeps America in a position of greatness and leadership in the world, and certainly our energy industry is one of the very big points of that.
Arguably the economic key to our self-sustainability.
Absolutely.
Did you like last night the mute button? I think it was really effective for Trump. I think it was a better look. He just looked way smarter than Biden because he is. And he let Biden hang himself, right? I mean, Biden, when Trump wasn't interrupting him, ran out of gas, no pun intended, about 8 times.
Yeah, there were a few things. I noticed, it's true. It sort of gives credence to the suspicion that you know, he comes out there, you know, just having gotten a shot of Adderall at just, you know, 5 seconds before he steps out from behind the curtain, and then it just begins to sort of wear off after about an hour. He seemed much more cranky, much more distracted, unfocused. He couldn't pronounce Rudy Giuliani's name. You know, he stumbled and slurred over some things. And
twice. Yeah.
Yeah, and twice. And you're looking over there at Trump, and he's just holding on to the sides of the podium, looking at him, and just firing on all cylinders 90 minutes later. I think one of the reasons he, you know, it's convenient that they've manufactured this big, you know, public relations display of a pandemic, which is a good excuse to keep him off the road. I think that's very convenient, because can you imagine him just freewheeling at a podium like Trump does? I mean, that would be a disaster within 15 minutes.
Right. 15 seconds, perhaps. But yeah. No,
well,
he doesn't.
That depends if he's got his Adderall or not.
That's true. He surprised a lot of us the first debate, because I think the expectations had been set so low. Similar thing happened with Hillary and the suspected seizures she was having. Remember, on the right, we were all pumping ourselves up. She's completely sick. She's having, she seizes anytime she's in public. Are they hiding it? A little bit of our expectation management failed us for that first debate, because I really was expecting him not to be able to spit out one sentence. The Adderall plus Trump's understandable interruption seemed to cover Biden in the first debate in a way that they didn't hear. And I think he just got obliterated.
Yeah. No, I, you know, the only people saying he won are his campaign and CNN.
College profs and students, man. Well, can we finish talking of just on as an outro, talk about China? Because here's kind of
China.
One of China.
China.
One of my projects, and I don't have the investigative powers to do it, obviously, is linking up this new re-upped Vatican China deal, horrible deal, going into year two. McCarrick, the strong love that this Vatican has for China, saying that they're the ones that are best instantiating Laudato Si, and tying this to their really uncamouflaged collusion against the United States of America, taking the side of China. I'd like someone to put all this together. I think it all goes together, but that's a kind of moral and intellectual intuition.
Well, you've come to the right place.
I know.
Because we did a vortex on this about 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, first of all, let's establish we don't have to really work hard to establish the tie between the Vatican and China. There's a few of those, obviously, the accord. But who put the accord together? Who was the diplomat flying back and forth? That was McCarrick. We know from a number of sources, but, you know, confirmed in Archbishop Vigano's first testimony back in 2018 on was released on the 25th, but he'd written it on the 22nd, Feast of the Queenship of Our Lady, that shortly, within a couple of months after Pope Francis was elected, he resurrected McCarrick, you know, right out of the doldrums of, you know, being sidelined by Pope Benedict for all his horrible crimes, and that he ran into Vigano as McCarrick was leaving, and Vigano was going in, and they ran into each other, and he said, "Yeah, I'm back, and the Pope's sending me to China tomorrow." That was in 2013, just a couple of months, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was June. Pope Francis was elected in March, and I believe that was June. It may have been May, but I'm pretty sure it was June. So you're just talking, you know, less than 90 days. You figure, you know, a new pope's got 100 million things to do. So to get somebody within the first 3 months, meet with them privately, and then give them an assignment, and off he goes to China. And he's the guy sort of hammering out this deal and talking with him and the whole bit. Remember when he came back from China, he was like, oh, it was like visiting old friends. I bet it was. So the Vatican and China and McCarrick, all right, now let's make some more connections. What's the connection between Biden and China? Well, I mean, you know, we could stand here and talk for 75 years about that. There's business dealings. There's the, you know, getting China to have most favored nation trade status that he pushed through with Senator Mitchell back in the 90s, and then finally got it for them in 2000s. All his own personal profiteering off that, as all the email scandals are showing. So is there a connection between the Vatican, China, McCarrick, and Biden? Well, if you look at any of the video, which we have, of the funeral of Biden's son, Beau, God rest his soul, the closing commendation at that funeral was done by McCarrick. It was not done by Mullooly, who is his bishop in Delaware. It was done by McCarrick in retirement. So why would Joseph Biden, living in Delaware, have pick up the phone and call McCarrick and say, hey, can you come here and do the closing commendation for the funeral of my son? I mean, there's got to be some sort of relationship there.
Right.
And going back further on a political level, there's a personal relationship there to do that. That's a kind of an intimate thing to ask somebody, and then an intimate thing to accept it. But if you go back politically, go back to 2004 with the request by the U.S. bishops, the inquiry, I suppose you could say, when they made to the CDF, when Cardinal Ratzinger was at that time was head of the CDF, prefect, about this question about politicians receiving Holy Communion, Catholic politicians in favor of abortion receiving Holy Communion. The question at the time was related to Kerry, but of course it applied by extension to all of them, Kennedy, Biden, all of them, Pelosi, etc. So what happened there? Well, it was McCarrick that gave them all cover. He took a footnote from the bottom. Yes, it, in relation to politicians, it said, no, they must be denied Holy Communion, Canon 915. Wuerl always lied about that and said it was Canon 916 that was applicable, that it was on the onus was on them, the politician, not to come up to receive Holy Communion. That's the onus on them. Okay, that's fine. You shouldn't. You should stay in your seat or, you know, go to confession, you know, change your life, et cetera, and everything, save yourself from damnation. But in this little narrow conversation, you shouldn't come up to receive Holy Communion. The minute you get into that line to come up and receive Holy Communion, Canon 916 is done. Now Canon 915 takes effect because you've committed. Now I'm about to, as the minister of Holy Communion, the priest, bishop, deacon, whoever, I'm about to give you Holy Communion. And that was the question the bishops posed to the CDF. And that was the answer that the CDF, Cardinal Ratzinger, gave back and said, no, Canon 915 applies, and they are not to receive Holy Communion. There was a footnote at the bottom of that thing that said, now, if you're talking about individual, like not public, notorious sinners, you're talking about just public people, if they have some proportionate reason and they're not voting for one of these crazy guys and blah, 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 you know, exception, 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 they may be able to receive Holy Communion. That's an anonymous person just sitting in the pews who nobody knows what their mind is, unlike these politicians who go out and canvass Planned Parenthood for hundreds of millions of dollars for their campaigns.
Right.
And that is what that footnote is what Cardinal McCarrick reported back to the USCCB with the help of Wilton Gregory. Those two reported back to the USCCB, to all their bishop, all their brother bishops. They lied to them and said, oh no, Cardinal Ratzinger said, you know, you can receive Holy Communion if you have proportionate reasons, and hence the tale has spun throughout the entire Catholic pro-abortion political world ever since, giving Kerry, but now Biden, cover for all of this. So, is there a relationship here? There's a professional relationship. There's a church relationship. There's a personal relationship. All of this is inside the same, the same barn. You know, the globalist influence in the Vatican right now, the desire to be in bed with China in every possible way they can be. McCarrick, who's a wheeler and dealer, crooked pervert, you know, a predator, shipping, you know, tens of millions of dollars all over the world, probably being the guy behind the Vatican giving Hillary $1 million, secretly getting $1 million to her campaign. We did an interview or got information from an economist in Italy, I think it was earlier in the summer, June or July, that the the Vatican is receiving $2 billion a year from Red China, from Communist China, you know, to give them cover. Wow. And you know, this was picked up by a guy who has no dog in the fight. This guy's just a hedge fund manager, an international hedge fund manager who's noticing. He's like, oh, look at this money flowing. How is this happening? What's going on here? Interestingly enough, he doesn't know any of these politics. He's an unchurched Italian Catholic, who, you know, like most Catholics, just has nothing to do with the church. Right. He doesn't even know who the players are. He's just like, hey, wait a minute, why is this, where's this money coming from? Oh, this is originating in China and ending up in the Vatican. Well, that's weird. Why is that happening? And if you go back to the first year it happened, 2013, the first year of the Pope Francis papacy. Again, who went to China in 2013? McCarrick. So, yeah, all of this is intertwined. You may never know the exact connections. It's not like people are taking videos, unless you're Hunter. You know, it's not like people are taking videos and, you know, writing down their stuff and saying, well, this is what we're going to do, and this is evil and illegal, and this is how we're going to take over the world. But, you know, at some point you have to say the mountain of circumstantial evidence and the refusal to discount any of it, to deny any of it, to offer an explanation for any of it, you know, sure makes you look pretty bloody guilty.
Holy cow, man. Yeah, I thought that would be a parting shot. We didn't even get into Cardinal Zen and the underground church. I mean, this, okay, so people know that we've got to close up here. This is a big deal. The Hunter Biden stuff is a big deal. The Dems want war with Russia and want to be friends with China. They're trying to pitch it that the Republicans want war with China and want to be friends with Russia. It all seems to tie in together. We haven't even talked about any of the recent Francis news because we simply don't have time. But the re-signing, the recertification of the Vatican-China deal is corrupt. It stinks to high heaven. It slipped in under all of this week and last week's weirdo news, shocking news. And I just really hope, Mike, that there at Church Militant, you guys stay on it the way you always do with vortexes, because China and the globalist influence are what seem to be driving everything, including coronavirus, including the weird interference in the American election. And I just, it's like China. Everything's coming up China, and you know, we're
everything
out of time
is here. China. The coronavirus, the economic issues, the religious issues, the Vatican involvement, the McCarrick involvement, the Biden involvement. At some point, if there is truly, I don't want to use the word conspiracy, although, you know, people in the world do conspire.
Right.
But in the world of all of this, from a spiritual standpoint, there is an evil force, powers of darkness, prince of darkness, there's Satan, and his desire is to destroy humanity, to destroy the church, and thereby destroy humanity. In the sense of not only earthly, but obviously ultimately it's salvation, individual salvation. Why wouldn't you be putting something together like this? I mean, Satan just sitting on his throne in hell, like puffing on a cigar, just saying, hey, well, let's see what happens, like we're watching a movie. Like,
right.
He's not behind things. Of course he's behind things. And at some point, if you put together a very complex, not to him, but to us, a very complex plan, and you're moving towards this, at some point it has to become revealed. You know, if I'm a guy who's constantly maneuvering with a group of friends to knock off that bank, no matter how much planning I do and how much smokescreen stuff I can do and no matter how much surveillance I can do, there comes the day where I have to sort of come out in public and actually rob the bank, because that's the point. Well, it's
right.
The same thing here. If the point is to ultimately take control of things, well, at some point you've got to seize control. No matter how much you've covered it up in advance and deflected from it and, you know, whatever, used all the tools to make people look the other way and a sleight of hand, someday the day arrives where you have to take control, because that's your goal.
Sure.
And I think we're seeing that all like this far away right now.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, another interview from my three Michaels week was Michael Anton, who thinks maybe we're having a color revolution. And that's the point of Biden, Clinton, Podesta, Al Gore, all saying under no circumstances on November 3rd, or under no circumstances after November 3rd, should Biden concede victory to Trump. Like, what if he loses all states but Minnesota, like Mondale lost to Reagan? Under that circumstance, no. That is, maybe they're softening the way, and this would be a kind of coming out party if there was color revolution, even if it was an unsuccessful one. That would be the coming out that you're talking about.
Sure.
If Biden wins and more openly links to China, that would be the coming out you're talking about. The crazy part about being a human being, a contingent creature in history, is everything's kind of a close call here. There are seven or so states that really matter in this upcoming election, and they're all close enough to the margin of error that you could get Trump winning all seven. You could have Biden winning all seven. You could split them 4-3 or 3-4. We just don't know, and it's uncomfortable as a human being, flesh and blood, to be right before we're about to figure out something that we feel like we could know through polling and through ratio, but we just don't know. And that's why we're trying to do these shows. I'll be appearing with you, probably the next time I'll see you will be November the 2nd on Church Militant, your excellent panel of pre-election predictors among people who really just don't know.
But but we don't know nothing.
We don't know nothing, though. Yeah, we know enough. And hopefully the October surprise will have blossomed by November the 2nd. That's my hopes and prayers to our
Absolutely.
Good Lord.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks a million, Mike. Always informative.
Appreciate it, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought that I really did think that China question would be like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. We're looking into a lot of this, but that was a vast configuration of connections, man. I'm gonna have to get with you on that.
It's a great constellation. And when you just sort of see it, you know, you look up in the night sky, for example, and you see like one part of the Big Dipper, one or two stars not directly next to each other, and you're looking up, you're like, mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you see the Big Dipper, and you see all of them, and there they are. There's that constellation. You're like, oh, wait a minute, I get it. It's maybe 90% in view right now with regard to that whole thing.
Right. Well, Biden will be one or two of those stars, Hunter and the big fella, or at least one star that we're kind of seeing, oh, they're these players in this vast China configuration that I really pray will come out more in the next week and a half. And I'll see you then. But I really appreciate your time, Mike. This was a really valuable interview, post-debate interview, and I appreciate your time.
Got it. Thank you very much, Tim. God bless, and God bless all your listeners.
Okay. God bless you too, Mike. Peace.
Bye-bye.